he's crowned king. He makes sure he's crowned king first, but he then immediately marries Elizabeth, and that's one big landmark, and then they start having children, which is a series of other big landmarks. So Prince Arthur, who's born in 1486, he's the first child who has both Henry's Lancastrian blood, albeit Henry's direct Lancastrian claim is not at all strong, and Elizabeth's Yorkist blood running in his veins. So he's the token of the new Tudor family. And of course, death rates being as they were in the 15th century, you need more than one son. So the birth of Prince Henry, who's then made Duke of York in 1491, who eventually succeeds as Henry VIII, and then Prince Edmund in 1499, these are dynastic events which mean that you're providing the kind of security that a single legitimate ruler provides.
Yep.
But then, of course, there are also bad dynastic events. Most obviously, Arthur's death in 1502. So the heir to the throne dies when he's on the edge of manhood. He's just married Catherine of Aragon. And then the death of Elizabeth of York in 1503, which seems to have distressed Henry himself very deeply. And although he talks a bit about possible remarriages after that for diplomatic reasons, it seems that he's really personally very cut up by losing his wife of so many years. So those are the big dynastic events. Going with them are the big political events in terms of the defeat of rivals for the throne. And in that sense, the Battle of Bosworth is the first big event of the reign in which Richard III's killed in battle and Henry establishes himself as king. But you then have a series of challengers for the throne. So Lambert Simnel, who was claiming to be Edward Earl of Warwick, the nephew of Edward IV, and Richard III. He's crowned king in Ireland. He's crowned as King Edward VI of England and Lord of Ireland, and then brought across, but then defeated in battle at East Stoke near Newark in 1487. The next big challenger is Perkin Warbeck, who is claiming to be the younger of the two princes in the Tower, Richard, Duke of York. Mm. And he makes various attempts to invade England, some by sea, landing defeated in Kent, then by land from Scotland. And then eventually he's captured in 1497 when he's trying to capitalise on the big Cornish rebellion against Henry VII. So the Cornish rebels are defeated just outside London at the Battle of Blackheath. Then they're pursued back into Cornwall, and there Warbeck, who's joined them, is captured. So that's the next big rival claimant to the throne defeated. And the third one is a bit of a damp squib. Edmund de la Pole, the Earl of Suffolk, who takes exile on the continent, having been quite a prominent courtier at Henry's court, but then turns against the king, goes into exile, waves around his Yorkist claim to the throne, but is then taken prisoner and then handed over to Henry in 1506. So those would be the landmarks in terms of defeating rival claimants to the throne. And then the third kind of big event, the thing that gives scaffolding to Henry's relationship as king with the other European powers, are the big diplomatic events of the reign, because European powers nearest England, France, the Dukes of Burgundy who ruled the Netherlands, to some extent the Dukes of Brittany who had been Henry's hosts when he was himself in exile, they're people who've all intervened in the civil wars in England, in the struggles for control of the English throne. And so Henry ideally needs to construct a system of diplomatic alliances, which will mean that none of them has an interest in removing him and his family, so that he's tied his family into all these royal family networks. So the first big landmark there is 1489, Treaty of Medina del Campo with the Spanish rulers Ferdinand and Isabella, by which his son and heir Arthur will marry their daughter Catherine of Aragon. Mm. And that marriage eventually carried out when the children have grown up, but that's the first big diplomatic landmark. 1492, after a brief war with France, there's the Treaty of Etaples, which establishes peace with France, and so, if you like, puts a terminus to the last phases of the Hundred Years' War, moving on from the loss of most of the English territory in France in the 1450s. Then you have peace with the Scots, a truce in 1497, and then peace and marriage alliance in 1502, by which Henry's daughter Margaret is going to marry James IV, the King of Scots. And then the last one, which we often forget, but is quite important in contemporary eyes, is the betrothal of Henry's younger daughter Mary in 1507-1508 to Charles of Ghent. Charles of Ghent is the son of Philip the Fair, who's the Habsburg ruler of the Netherlands, and his father has died in 1506, so he's already ruler of the Netherlands at the age of 7 or 8, he's born in 1500. But the amazing thing about him is the places he stands to inherit if the dynastic lottery works out in his favour, as in the end it does, because he's the grandson of Max